That's my dog. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Time to pull up again. Let's head down south to Columbia, South Carolina, home of Hootie and the Blowfish, and also home of Frank Martin, one of my favorite coaches in all of athletics, particularly college athletics. Frank, thank you for joining us. The head basketball coach of South Carolina. He's been the national coach of the year. He's coached in the Final Four. He's one of the most thoughtful and smart people I know. Frank, what have you learned, if anything, about yourself during this quarantine?
Probably sounds crazy because it's everything I do talk about, is that I've actually done a real crappy job as a dad to engage my children in conversations and kind of understand just how disconnected I really was from how they go about their daily lives. And my challenge here lately has been to re-engage my 14-year-old daughter to let her know that I actually exist, that I'm not a text message. I'm not a, I'm not a character at a basketball game that she comes to support. It's been an interesting month. And I'm extremely happy that this has happened. Excuse me.
Wow.
I'm happy that I've been jacked up in the house.
You just gave an example of why I have so much respect and affinity for you. You're one of the most honest people I've ever met. But some people watching may not know this. Frank and I go all the way back to my days at the Kansas City Star. Frank becomes a head coach at Kansas State. And the reality is, at least I can say this on my end, initially, I did not like Frank Martin. I don't think we liked each other initially. And so, Frank, when was the moment where you said, hey, man, maybe Whitlock's not such a bad guy?
Marcellus, imagine that. I just got in a long line of people that didn't like Jason Whitlock. But no,
right.
The beginning was interesting. Yeah, the beginning was interesting because I get named head coach, and all of a sudden, you weren't alone, Jason. There was a long line of folks in the media that just attacked me. And never gave me a chance for any of them to ever have a cup of coffee or an adult beverage with me. They just, you're a bum. You're not going to do any well. And it's okay. But I know this, you had a great relationship with my president. And you guys, he used to tell me all the time that, like, Frank, Jason Whitlock's a really good guy. I said, well, I wish he would write that way. But it's time went on. And I'm telling you where everything changed, Jason. A lot of folks in the media, you know, they put their opinions, they write their stories, right or wrong, they go on to the next one. You came up to me and you said, hey, Frank, I got to tell you, I was wrong. And it doesn't mean I'm going to write nice things about you, but I just want you to know that what I wrote was wrong. And as a man, what can you ever ask from somebody else that takes ownership for whatever they thought was right or wrong? Now, when did
it's
I turn the page and get you on board?
Listen, man, at the end of the day, I'm always about the work. And it was your third year at K-State, and you took Jacob Pullen and Dennis Clemente and made a great basketball team. And it just blew me away. And then it becomes like, holy cow, this guy knows exactly what he's doing. He's a tremendous coach. And so my respect went through the roof. And you're right. John Weefall, the president of K-State, also helping to open my eyes about your character and what type of person you were. And, you know, from there, we were just off and running. Marcellus, go ahead and jump in.
Yeah. Now, Frank, I mean, look, you have a reputation. You're fiery, in-your-face type of personality as a coach. Modern-day Bobby Knight, some would say. Do you like those comparisons, and are they accurate?
I like the X and O comparison. I mean, heck, you can compare my basketball coaching ability to Coach Knight's, but at the end of the day, I kind of stand on my own 2 feet, Marcellus. That's why I respect you guys the way I do. You guys don't allow anyone to put you guys in a box as to what you should be or say or act. And you're willing to stand up and represent yourselves on this great show. And, I grew up in South Florida. I'm a football guy. So I bring a football mentality to basketball. That's the way I was coached when I was a kid growing up. And I ended up coaching for 16 years in the same neighborhood that I grew up in, and I still lived in it. So to me, it's about coaching people, not coaching the score of the game, being totally invested in helping young people move forward. And then the last thing I'll say to all that is, I used to like it when coaches, we all were allowed to show our personalities because we recruit these kids. So we understand who they are. They understand who we are as coaches. They choose to come play for us. So I'm not coaching anybody else's players. I'm not coaching people to see me on TV. I'm committed to the kids that we coach and we recruit, and they're committed to me, and it's a marriage. We all understand each other. I used to like it when coaches weren't cookie cutters and we all had a personality and everyone was willing to show it and be themselves.
Now, Frank, I can see your love for football. You can see the helmets behind you. And as you said, you've been coaching for so long, over five different decades. How have you had to adjust your coaching style over the years?
That's where it gets interesting. And I think this is the biggest mistake coaches make is they get the opportunity to move forward in the business and get a job like the one I got or another university or and they start conforming to public opinion to keep their job. And I think that's the biggest mistake anyone can ever make, because what gets us to this place is our ability to connect with the people that we're coaching, not appease the people that have public opinions on the inside, on the outside. Where I've had to adapt my coaching is the players. Well, the players don't learn like they used to learn, and they don't care how I learned. They don't live in my generation, in my era. But it's my job to understand how this young generation learns. Anytime you can figure out how someone learns, then you got a chance to grab their heart. Why? Because then they can they genuinely know that you're committed to helping them. You're not worried about the score of the game. You're worried about helping them. And when you can grab someone's heart, then you can challenge them. Then you can force them to grow. Then every once in a while, I can have that moment because I'm an emotional guy where I kind of go a little bonkers. And then, when the game ends, my wife absolutely annihilates me. And then my mother calls me and says, "Why were you so mean to that young man?" Then I'll go in the next day and I take ownership in front of the team. And then it's for a moment that I wish maybe wasn't there, but it's all part of it. And my biggest adjustment has been trying to learn how these young kids learn today. They don't care that they used to paddle me if I missed a layup. They don't care that we used to run 6 miles every day for whatever. They want to know that I understand them. And that's the biggest, because this generation, they have so much information. I mean, all I knew is whatever my mother or my coach told me. I had no idea about anything else. This generation, as soon as you say something, they correct you because they go Google it and get the right answer.
And coach, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of those kids potentially could have been this NBA sensation and collegiate sensation, Zion Williamson, grew up in your backyard right there in South Carolina. How close were you in South Carolina of getting Zion in that sweepstakes?
Yeah, I think it's better answered by him, because he would know. But we were in there. I was the last coach they allowed in the home. I was in his home for 3 hours. 48 hours before he made the decision. What an incredible human being. Everyone, he became a YouTube sensation because of these dunks that we're all watching right now. But his ability to understand how to coexist with others, to understand how to win, who he is as a kid, his willingness to accept instruction. You know, his father's a coach. His mother was a teacher or is a teacher. It's just a great family, great young man. And the best part about all of it is, and I think the world's starting to see this a little bit, how humble and how hungry he is. He's hungry for information, and he's humble that his teammates love him and everyone that comes around him loves him. He's an unbelievable human being.
Frank, people think I'm crazy when I say this,
but maybe you won't. I saw Michael Beasley step onto Kansas State's campus, and to me, he's as talented as any basketball player I have ever seen. As much natural basketball talent as I have ever seen, compare him to anybody. Am I crazy for thinking that?
Absolutely not. It's he's by far the best one-and-done season of any player in the one-and-done era. Statistically, we had 9 first-year players, 7 of which were freshmen. You had a first-year head coach of me who I look back now, and I was useless as a coach compared to what I think I know now. He's unbelievable and just a great, great kid that was trying to find himself. And he just... we just spoke about 2 weeks ago. He's still in that journey to completely be at peace with who he is. But what I know is this, when everyone on the outside world now is trying to say, you know, he failed as the second pick of the draft or this or whatever, didn't meet expectations. I know this, he's a heck of a father to his children. And that to me means more than any basketball accolade he can ever get. And he's learned that. And that, but from a talent standpoint, Hey, Whit, I took him out of a game against Nebraska one time. He had scored 17 consecutive points. And I took him out of the game. When he walked by me, goes, "What I do?" He said, I said, "Nothing. I'm just tired of hearing your name. Go sit down for a little while." So, and he just started laughing. He thought that was the greatest thing of all time.
Hey, Coach, we're running out of time, but because I know you're a great motivator, And we had Urban Meyer do this last week, and he did a great job. Could you give sports fans a bit of a pep talk? We're all a little depressed right now because of this coronavirus.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep your heads up. I think the one thing we've all learned during the last 4 weeks is how much sports means to all of us in this society. All of us involved in sports understand the necessity that we have to coexist. It teaches us how to get along with each other. It teaches us how to not look at each other like being different, but want to understand each other so we can grow from one another. So give us some time. It's just a matter of time. This too shall pass. The reason it shall pass is because sports teaches us we come together during difficult times. And we've done that. We're starting to pay attention. Our great leaders will find a vaccine. And just a matter of time before we're lining up and we're going to be in front of each other and giving you fans everything that you want. And it's going to be a much better understanding from us because the one thing I've learned during this time that I never want to hear anyone say that players are not paid enough money, because what they bring to our families, our communities, our homes is unbelievable. And it's a journey that that we all want to be a part of. So we'll see you guys soon. And can't wait to get back on the sideline and provide some relief to everyone that watches.
That's my dog. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Time to pull up at Chris Harris Jr.'s crib. Speak for Yourself presented to you by Hyundai. All right, let's go out to Chris Harris Jr. He made the all-decade team. I've actually been following this guy's career since 2007 when he was a Kansas Jayhawk. But you built this entire career in Denver. You make the all-decade team. You win a Super Bowl. You make Pro Bowls, all-pro teams. And now you're leaving the nest and joining the Los Angeles Chargers. How difficult was it for you, Chris, to make this move, to leave Denver where you've had all this success and now start a new level of a new transition in your career? How difficult was it?
Oh, it was very difficult. We definitely laid our roots there, leaving all those fans and all the people that's just been watching me over the last 9 years, it definitely was hard, but I'm excited to go to LA, man, join the Chargers. They got a lot of great pieces there, and I'm looking forward to joining those guys.
Yeah, I'm glad you said a lot of great pieces, because the addition of you along with Derwin James being healthy this year, Hayward, Bosa, Ingram, sounds like the best defense in the league. You agree?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree, man. All we got to do is just put in that work, get that chemistry, and just really, that's all it takes, man, just making sure we're all on the same page. And I just got the iPad, so I've been studying as much as I can to try to make sure when we do get the Clarence to show up and to work together, then I'm caught up.
Yeah, you changed teams, but you still got a familiar foe in Patrick Mahomes. And I'm looking at your addition to the secondary and all those names back there. You guys built to stop Mahomes?
I think so, man. You can never have enough DBs. And in order to stop a good quarterback, you got to have great pass rush. And I think with our D-line that we got with Bosa, Ingram, Ben, Linval Joseph that we just added, and all the other pieces, young pieces that they got, you got to have a D-line. And as long as we're coordinated as a secondary, we're definitely going to make it, try to make it hard for them.
Man, I truly respect you, Chris, and your road. I went to a small school, second rounder, and I understand how the grind looks, but you went from undrafted to the all-decade team. Here I am. I'm happy I won player of the week one time, and you are on the all-decade team, man. Tell me about that road.
Man, it was definitely a hard way, man. Signing $2,000 signing bonus that I had with Denver, being the last one picked up. that whole time, man, I made the team on special teams, and I knew that was the way to get myself in the door. And then by week five, I was on the field playing defense. So I just knew there were steps to be able to get on the field. And then from there, I wasn't going to let them take me off the field. And that was my goal, is to just be consistent. And that's what I've been trying to do.
Now, I had a roommate, Pat Williams, who was undrafted as well. So I need you to keep it real.
Yeah.
When you're undrafted, were you thinking special teams or were you thinking all-decade team? Because I know how my boy Pat was thinking.
I was thinking special teams at that time, man, for sure.
right.
And then as I continue to just build my legacy, we went to Super Bowls, going to Pro Bowls, all pros, then I'm like, shoot, I might as well go try to get this decade Hall of Fame. And that's what I'm striving for now, is just continue to just all be 100% all in on football. And man, I'm not going to put any expectations on myself because I've already exceeded them. So if I go continue to work and continue to believe that I can go get this Hall of Fame, that's what I'm going to keep doing.
Chris, why have you been underestimated almost since high school? Really only one Division I offer coming out of college. You didn't even make all Big 12 starting 4 years in Kansas. Undrafted, not invited to the combine. Why have people underestimated you your entire career?
I don't know, man. It's always been my story. It's just the underdog story. It was just, I just had to take the hard way. I never had anybody willing to just always go out there and just go for me. You know what I mean? Or having tons of offers, I didn't get that. Or having tons of teams pick me up after college, I didn't get that. So I've always been a person that I've always had to make a way myself. Even at Denver, they tried to take my spot down there every year. So I had to always overcome that, be able to solidify myself. And that's what it just took, man. It just had to take the hard way.
I said at the top, I go all the way back to your days in Kansas. I was in Kansas City when you came to Lawrence, Kansas in 2007. Y'all went 12-1. It was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in college football. And one of the really most incredible things was they had you at one corner, Aqib Talib at the other corner, and longtime Charger safety Daryl Stuckey in at the safety position. Were you aware of how good y'all were at that time?
Well, of course, at that time, we knew Aqib Talib was great. I mean, he was already All-American the year before. I knew Stuckey was a great safety and definitely had a chance to make it to the NFL. But, we never knew that we'd all, sooner or later, be all in the same Pro Bowls, win Super Bowls together, and me and Talib. And so it's definitely crazy, man. But we knew that we were really good because I know we ranked pretty high my freshman year in our secondary, so I knew that we were pretty nice back then.
Have you talked to Aqib Talib since making the all-decade team? And was he happy or was he jealous?
Oh, man, I talked to him, man. That's my big brother, man. That's truly my big brother, man. I love Aqib Talib. He's a guy that's always looked out for me, always just welcomed me with open arms, man. And he's definitely upset, as he should be. I mean, the guy had 10 touchdowns this decade. They could have definitely added another spot for him at the corner position. I definitely think he deserves it. And so I was upset with him, too.
All right, I want to go back to Kansas again and talk, because that what y'all accomplished was just incredible. What Mark Mangino accomplished was incredible. Yeah. And I mean this respectfully. I'm a big guy just like Mark Mangino. If Mark Mangino, true or false, if Mark Mangino were 180 pounds, he would be on the same level as Nick Saban, true or false?
I'd have to go true. He's a great coach, man. I don't know why he's not coaching now. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, he's a great coach. He knows football. He knows how to motivate players. So, I mean, I think he's been punished enough, man. I think he's been, I mean, that was 2010 when he got fired. So I think it's definitely time for him to get back in the seat.
I want to ask you this because I know you're a thoughtful person. You know, your reputation in Kansas was ideal, yeah, student athlete. What have you learned about yourself during this quarantine? Because it's been a time for people to reflect and reconnect with their family. I think you and your wife have a kid. What have you learned about yourself during this quarantine?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I think it's just not to waste that time, man. I think for me, it's just making every time valuable, even though we're stuck at home, just trying to find something to do and not be lazy. So that's something that I've been trying to do, man. If I can just find something in a house that might need some tuning up or anything, man, just trying to find something to do.
Have you binged anything on Netflix or Amazon that you can tell us about? Maybe give us a recommendation. Anything we can watch on Amazon or Netflix?
Money Heist, man, Netflix. You got to look into that.
What is it about? Give us a quick description and we'll let you go.
It's about bank robbing and things like that. I don't want to get too far into it, but it's the bank robbing, stealing. It's a lot of action in it.
Boy, you
don't sound better
critic
than Tiger King.
Hey, man, I don't want to tell you too much. I got to go in there and watch it, man. Just take my word for it.
Oh, man.
All right, well, my recommendation is check out Tiger King on Netflix. Good luck to you with the charges. That. Maybe you can make a... Oh,
yeah, that was incredible. Tiger King from Oklahoma, right.
Maybe
man.
You got another. Oh, that's right. That's
all right,
right,
brother.
That's right. All right. Thank you, Chris. Chris Harris, all decade team from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I should have asked Chris about Pastor Michael Todd in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Maybe we'll do that next time.
It's our next.
That's my guy. My guy.
My question of the day.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a wonderful Wednesday afternoon. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, let's go out to his crib. Take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about Michael Jordan and LeBron James. The debate about which of these guys is the GOAT always seems to be making news. Now, one of Jordan's biggest rivals, Bill Laimbeer of the Bad Boy Pistons, has decided to weigh in. Laimbeer had some fierce battles with MJ, but actually says LeBron is the greatest basketball player of all time, and that it's not even close. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you think Laimbeer really believes this?
No, I don't. I believe Bill Laimbeer is being very loyal to Isaiah Thomas, and I respect that. Isaiah Thomas was treated poorly by Michael Jordan and was left off an Olympic team, and it was a disgrace. That happened. Isaiah Thomas certainly belonged on that team. He's one of the greatest players, particularly of that era. Isaiah Thomas and the Detroit Pistons, they wrote the Jordan rules and used to beat up Michael Jordan. And Bill Laimbeer and most of the Detroit Pistons, not fans of Michael Jordan. They don't get the proper respect that they deserve because of the Bulls dynasty and Michael Jordan. I don't buy this remotely that that's what he believes. Anybody, to me, with an objective opinion knows that Michael Jordan is the GOAT or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the GOAT, one or the other, but it ain't LeBron James right now. LeBron has a shot, but it ain't him right now.
I actually believe him. I believe him. I think he's being honest. I think that he is telling us something that we all know about ourselves, that so much of life is about your perspective. And he's a former peer of Michael Jordan, a foe of Michael Jordan. So when Michael Jordan's flying through the lane and all of our collective mouths are open in awe, he's in there defending this guy. And he's not as enamored with him because he's not an outsider. And because of that unique perspective, he was able to see the greatness of Michael Jordan, but also some of the issues or flaws in his game. So if you look at this conversation, a lot of people get it confused and they can't see it clearly. They always think who's more accomplished is always the greater one. That's not the case. Is Bill Russell a better player than Wilt Chamberlain? No, he's just more accomplished. And in this conversation, MJ versus LeBron, they're closer in terms of ability and accomplishment. So that makes it a little confusing for people. But here's something that you can argue against MJ being the GOAT and giving it to LeBron. LeBron's going to go down in history with more points, more rebounds, more assists, but not more championships. And I think that's what MJ can always hold as his gold standard with his resume. I'm undefeated in the finals. I never went to a game seven. No one can argue that, but there are other attributes to the game of basketball that LeBron actually trumps Michael Jordan, and I named a few.
You know what? I actually believe he's telling the truth. You got to think about it. Like you said, Whitlock, Bill Laimbeer, he played alongside Isaiah Thomas. That was his leader. So we all know Isaiah Thomas is the guy who's a team-first guy. Michael Jordan is a guy who a lot of people consider was a little selfish, as great as he was. So from Bill Laimbeer's perspective, he's going to lean more towards the team-first guy, a la LeBron James. So to me, it makes sense why he would think LeBron is the GOAT or is better than Michael Jordan, especially when these guys competed year after year. And early on, the Pistons gave Jordan everything he wanted and then some. MJ could not get past those bad boy Pistons until, you know, Scottie Pippen came along and he got developed, and, you know, and we know what happened from there on. But from Laimbeer's perspective, he was like, shoot, we battled right there alongside with Jordan and beat him. So why would I put him as the GOAT?
Well, I want to say this about numbers. Numbers don't lie, but people can twist numbers and make them tell a falsehood. Michael Jordan spent 3 years in college. LeBron came straight to the NBA right out of high school at 18 and started putting up those numbers. Obviously, Michael set out for those 2 years. LeBron's going to pass him in a lot of stats just based off longevity, better science today than what they had during Michael Jordan's era. Michael, I think, lost nearly an entire season to an injury. So I get it that LeBron James has a case to be the greatest of all time. But for Bill Laimbeer to have witnessed, participated in a whole little set of rules and a strategy to take down Michael Jordan, they wrote a book about it called The Jordan Rules. As great as LeBron has been, and his impact has been pretty enormous, I don't think his impact on the game of basketball matches Michael Jordan's. I'm not even sure if his impact in terms of just changing the game. Steph Curry changed the game. He changed the style of the way the NBA has been played right now. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, when he changed the game, they changed rules in college basketball for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. LeBron has been tremendous. We'll see. Maybe he can. They'll restart this season. He'll get another championship, and he'll enhance his resume for being better than Michael Jordan. But I'm telling, I love Isaiah Thomas, not as much as Bill Laimbeer, but I love Isaiah Thomas. I really do. But I'm not going to get crazy about it and start disrespecting Michael Jordan because I got a loyalty to Isaiah Thomas.
Look, to me, the longevity argument falls flat when you start to say, oh, LeBron's just going to pass Jordan because he played longer. Well, Vince Carter's going to play longer than anybody already did, and he's not surpassing Michael Jordan or LeBron James. It's not just a longevity argument. It's greatness and consistent excellence is why LeBron is going to surpass Michael Jordan. The injuries to Michael Jordan, the tap out and taking time away from the game, all should count against Michael Jordan, not, oh, by the way, he did these certain things or this happened to him. All that's on your resume. And I can easily understand an argument that Michael Jordan's the greatest because you talk about impact. But here's the thing about LeBron and his impact. It hasn't fully been felt yet. I mean, give LeBron 20 years post-retirement like Michael Jordan has right now, and let's see his impact. Because right now, as he's playing, if you were to forecast what that impact looks like, it's going to be tremendous and rival Michael Jordan. So in terms of impact, it's too soon for LeBron James to be truly measured. But in terms of greatness on the court, he's still doing it. And that's why I think this is an argument.
That's my dog. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, Speak for Yourself, presented to you by Hyundai. All right, let's move out to God's country, Marcellus, Kansas City. And let's bring in Brett Veach, the general manager of the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. Brett, listen, I found a picture of you on the 1997 Pennsylvania All-State team, pictured alongside our very own LeVar Arrington. You were a two-time All-State player. Were you a better player than LeVar Arrington?
That's a great pick. I appreciate you sharing that. Look, I would love to sit here and say I was a better player, but people back in Pennsylvania know what kind of a player LeVar was. He was certainly an icon back in the state of Pennsylvania, a great pro player. I will say this, Jason, though. I feel like I have a strained relationship with LeVar ever since bumping into him and you guys in Miami and LeVar emphatically picking the Niners to win the game. So he was a better player, but I think our relationship is strained a bit.
Yeah, not a good prognosticator. We know that. No, we tolerate him here, though. All right, you won a Super Bowl championship. What does a Super Bowl champion general manager do for fun during a quarantine?
Oh, wow. Aside from cranking out a lot of web chats with players and watching a lot of tape, I would probably have to say getting a lot of batting practice in with the kids outside. You know, their season's certainly suspended like everyone else's. And I got to try to dust off the old curveball and off-speed pitch because my kids are getting proficient at the fastball. So I'd say working on my overall pitching game right now.
Now, Andy Reid says that you saw Patrick Mahomes and said he was the best prospect you've ever seen. If that's true, what did you see that others missed?
Well, look, I mean, after Pat's rookie season, you know, we traded Alex Smith and I got asked by the national media at the combine in 2018 what we thought of moving forward with Pat Mahomes. And I said, look, he's the best player I've ever seen. And I think from the time we started the process with Patrick, his talent was undeniable, but he just has that uncanny ability to make people around him better. And whether that was at Texas Tech during his sophomore and junior seasons and even early on in his freshman year and coming into the league, he just has he's the ultimate competitor. He makes people around him better. And I think one thing both you guys can appreciate being around the sport for so long, when you are at this level, it is so hard to really stand out and to make other great players look average. And to have this kid come in here as a rookie during rookie camps and even preseason, even though he wasn't a full-time starter, he's just, every time the ball is in his hands, he just has the ability to kind of separate himself. And, you know, it was a matter of time. And fortunately for us, Patrick has made everyone here look smart.
Now, how difficult will it be to pay Patrick Mahomes what he's worth without compromising your salary cap?
Yeah, listen, there'll be some challenges along the way. And those are good problems to have. I think if you're general manager of an NFL team and if given a choice to have cap problems or have the best player in the NFL, I think every GM would take having the best player in the NFL on their team. So, look, there'll be challenges, but, you know, Pat's driven to win a lot of Super Bowls, and his mindset is like ours, to establish a legacy and to have this thing be successful for a long time. There'll be a lot of dialogue from now until the start of the season, but we're all confident that we'll be able to do something that is beneficial for us and beneficial for him, and everybody wins in the end.
Now, you said he was the best prospect you ever seen. You had him in his rookie year, and you saw him every day in practice. You ever questioned since you played him more as a rookie?
Oh, that's a good question. And, you know, we've been asked that a lot. I'll say this. The credit here goes to Coach Reed. This was his plan, his vision. Do I think that we could have played Pat as a rookie and had success? Sure. You know, I think that what he's accomplished so far kind of speaks for itself. But again, I think what people sometimes overlook and don't understand is the value and the experience that working underneath a guy like Alex Smith provided Pat. I mean, you know, Pat had the ability right away, but him able to come in, learn from Alex, and, you know, it's a marathon this season. So to come in and see every day what it's like to prep on Monday, prep on Tuesday, adjust throughout the season and see different tendencies from different coordinators throughout the year, you know, Pat wouldn't have had that experience. So Pat will be the first one to tell you how beneficial Alex Smith was to his career. And I certainly think we're in the position we are because of all of the mentorship that Alex Smith provided Pat.
All right, you go all the way back to Philadelphia with Andy Reid. You were a football player at the University of Delaware. How did you make the connection to Andy Reid to become Andy Reid's assistant coach in Philadelphia? How did that come about?
Yes, a lot of, like anything in life, is being in the right place at the right time. I had a relationship with the now Baltimore Ravens quarterback coach, James Urban, who at the time was Coach Reed's assistant. And, he had reached out to me, wanted me to work training camp as an intern while I was at the University of Delaware. So I spent a few seasons working with James Urban, who was Coach Reed's assistant at the time, working at training camp. And then when James got promoted up, there was an opening there to be coach's assistant. And James kind of reached out to me and told me he recommended me to coach. And the rest is history. So I certainly have to thank James for really getting my foot in the door.
You know, there's more history to this. Before James Urban, I believe Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, was Andy Reid's assistant. Then James Urban, then you. And then when you transition, you recommend Matt Nagy, who's now the head coach of the Chicago Bears. Tell the story of Andy Reid's reaction when you suggested Matt Nagy should join his coaching staff as an assistant coach to the assistant coaches.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. You know, at this position, a coach's assistant, it's very similar to being a GA in college. So everyone who has had a position like a grad assistantship knows it's a lot of grunt work, a lot of long hours, and not a lot of pay. So when I transitioned over to the scouting world, Coach had asked me if I had any recommendations. And I told Coach, I said, you know, there's this kid I played college ball with, Matt Nagy. I said he would be a great candidate to be a coach's assistant. And Coach was like, all right, let's bring him in. I'm assuming he's not married and he has flexible hours. And I told Coach, I said, actually, he's married. But again, I think he'd be a great candidate. And then Coach was like, well, we can work with that, but as long as he has no kids, because he'll never be home. And I told Coach, I said, actually, he has four kids. And Coach just looked at me and said, there's no way, this kid's not going to be able to work 16-hour days with four kids. But credit to Matt's wife, Stacy, to figuring it all out and you know, providing him this opportunity, and certainly was excited to see Matt get this opportunity in Chicago. But it was a funny story, and it certainly turned out well for everyone.
All right, so James Urban's coaching Lamar Jackson. You're the general manager of the Super Bowl champion Chiefs. Sean McDermott's the head coach of the Bills. Matt Nagy's the head coach of the Bears. Being an NFL head coach, to me, is really about coaching the assistant coaches because they're paid to coach the players. What makes Andy Reid such a great coach of other coaches?
Right. Well, he's a guy that just believes in his process, and you know, he never overlooks the details. And I think he installed that in me early on, and he installs that in all the coaches that come in and work for him. And you know, the game isn't won on Sunday. The game is won Monday through Friday, and it's done the hard way. It's a lot of tape work. It's a lot of paying attention to the details and the finer aspects of the process. And I think that when he brings people in, he coaches, you know, that element and aspect first, so that when these guys go on to coach their players and move on to different organizations, they understand that there are no shortcuts to success. And, you know, every part of the process is important. And if you overlook one part, you're not going to have success. So I think all of those people that you mentioned, I think that we've all were grounded early on, and Coach kind of took us under his wing And, you know, we value the long days and the early mornings. And but we know at the end of the day that if you follow this process, it'll work out and be successful.
Now, Brett, with all of this experience and your background as a coach, why didn't you continue down that coaching path like McDermott and Urban and others and Nagy, like you mentioned?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think when I first started, I think that was your natural inclination to think, well, you know, I love football and I want to stay involved in the game. I think at the time when I was working with Coach, I think early on in his career, it was all coaching. And then he had that middle phase in his career was coaching slash GM. Now it's back to coaching. But I think I kind of hit him during the time of his career where he was doing a lot of both. So I was exposed to both the coaching stuff during the fall and the scouting evaluation stuff in the spring. And the more I got to get involved helping him out with the evaluation process, the more I fell in love with it. So I think probably the initial intention was to maybe, you know, venture off into the coaching world. But once he got me involved with the personnel stuff, I fell in love with it and wanted to stick that route.
Now, once you fell in love with the process of evaluating personnel, was your vision to be the general manager along Andy Reid? What were you thinking in those moments?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I ever got ahead of myself. And I think that's one of the things that I would probably say that has helped me along this process. I think, you know, once I had the opportunity to work in the personnel side, I started off as an in-house scout, and after a while, I thought, wow, it'd be great to be an area scout. And then after being an area scout, I thought, wow, it'd be great to bounce around and do multiple areas. And then after that, I thought it'd be great to do multiple areas plus pro. So I think having the experience and knowing what each part of your personnel staff goes through, you know, I think I'm able to relate to guys in my pro staff. I'm able to relate to national scouts. I'm also able to relate to area guys and know the challenges that they present themselves. So I don't know if I ever got ahead of myself early on, but I do think looking back on you know where I started from and where I am, I'm very thankful to have kind of worked your way up the right way and to really value each part of this personnel department.
Now, I'm not sure anybody can relate to what's about to happen next week in terms of a virtual draft. You being a general manager, where are you preparing and what's this process and your concern level in entering this virtual draft? Andy Reid says he's prepping in his basement. How about you?
Yeah, no, we're all at home and we're all kind of, you know, have makeshift basements. And, you know, before we hopped on, I kind of showed you guys the little inside here. I can't show it publicly because I got my magnets on the board and got my walls magnetized. I got video screens everywhere. Magnets on the board. We got a bunch of computers, virtual chats going. So I think we'll be prepared. You know, it's a level playing field. All the teams have to go through this. And I think for the most part, we've had so much lead-in time to this draft. I think that we're all excited about this virtual draft. And I think if you ask all general managers, the one thing that will be concerning will just be if you get that last second trade offer where I think we're all prepared to handle trades, but if you're on the clock and you're ready to turn the card in with 30 seconds left, a team calls and wants to make a trade, just being, you know, sure that we have the communication on point and we know how to get people into certain chat rooms, whether it be doctors, area scouts, owners. So we'll do a couple more mocks with that and do some hypothetical scenarios and some last minute trades. But I think barring the last second trade offers, I think we'll be ready to go and the anxiety won't be as bad as what we initially thought.
Brett, let me ask you a follow-up on that. Will it be more difficult because of the coronavirus to discover that diamond in the rough prospect that maybe you could in previous drafts when you had a little bit more time, had more time to get face-to-face with potential draft picks? Any concern that you won't be able to find the diamond in the rough like previous years?
Well, that's a good point. There's no doubt that look, we're all aware of the top prospects and we're all aware of the guys that, you know, went to the combine and we're all aware of the guys at the big schools. Every year we see some small school guys that come out of nowhere and post big 40 times and big test numbers. And it forces all of us to do a second and third look. What I do think will be important is the continuation of this process. So, once you get through, like, for example, if this were last year, you feel like you've exhausted everything and every bit of information on prospects. I do feel that there'll be some small school guys that You know, maybe there'll be no mandatory mini camps, and maybe we'll go right to training camp. Hopefully we do. But I think that's a continuation of this process, and to make sure we continue to keep guys on the board and go back and do some whenever we're able to work in a full capacity. I think you'll see some pre-camp workouts. I think you'll see some, you know, additional discussion and deliberation that goes on that typically doesn't go on from now to the start of training camp, because there will be a pool of players that there just wasn't a lot of information on in regards to times and medical. So I do think that'll be important for us to stay up to date from now until the start of training camp.
All right, I'm going to play the role of Chris Jones' agent right now. Other than Aaron Donald, I think Chris Jones is the best defensive tackle in football. You guys have hit him with a franchise tag. Do you anticipate being able to get a long-term deal done with the best player on your defense?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's our goal, and that's our intent. And then we're going to certainly put our best foot forward. We have some time. I think the deadline is July 15th to get something done with him. So we do have some time. But, you know, again, the franchise tag speaks for itself in regards to, you know, how we value him. And we know that when we have the ability to pair him and Frank Clark together, it's a lethal combination. So we're going to put our best foot forward and make every attempt to get that done. And like I said, I think time works on our side here. We have a lot of time, and certainly there'll be continued discussions from now until July 15th.
All right, we'll let you go on this note, an easy one. I say Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, the modern-day version of Joe Montana and Bill Walsh. What do you say?
Well, that's really good company right there. I think you look at Bill Walsh, Hall of Fame coach, legend of the game. Andy Reid, Hall of Fame coach, legend of the game. Joe Montana, one of the greatest to ever play. And I think that Jason Marcellus, you'd agree with me. I think Pat Mahomes is certainly on that trajectory. So, shoot, those guys won 3 Super Bowls together. We got 1 down, 2 to go. But I said that sounds good to me.
Brett, thank you for the time. Appreciate it. Go Chiefs.
Thank you.
Let's get another Super Bowl.